This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yo, what's this?
I don't know.
What is it, like some type of old school Nintendo or something?
I don't think so. I don't recognize it. A game for those who seek to find a way to leave their world behind.
Welcome to Jumanji.
Jumanji.
Jumanji, what does that mean?
I have no idea. I've never heard of it.
Oh, what the hell? What happened to the rest of me?
I think we're in the game.
Sorry, excuse me?
What are you talking about?
Somehow, I don't know how, I think we got, like, sucked into the game. And we've become the avatars that we chose. So it's me, Spencer, but yet I look and sound like Dr. Smolder Bravestone.
This must-have high-tech gadget is now on the market and in high demand. It's a virtual reality headset. It's all the rage, apparently, at the Consumer Electronics Show.
In a freezing cellar with fake snow underfoot, I'm inching across a crevasse on my way up the world's highest peak.
In virtual reality, there is no limit to what we can do. We can be anywhere, anytime, any place.
May, where are you? What are you looking at?
No, there was a helicopter coming at me.
But what will the future of this advanced technology look like, do you think?
It's very hard to say where this technology is going. It's certainly moving towards cableless virtual reality and giving people the freedom to interact with virtual worlds using the skills that they were born with. That's an absolute must.
This could be the next big thing. We're talking about having virtual reality rooms in your living room, universities using virtual reality to teach, architects, astronauts, soldiers.
You can see a lot of potential for designers and even for doctors to look at things on a molecular scale as if they were inside of those cells.
The ability for people to put on headsets and walk around a room without having to be tethered to a PC or a laptop is going to make an enormous difference to the way in which virtual reality is exploited.
That was so intense. I, like, can't even with this place.
Hello and welcome to Science-ish. I'm Rick Edwards, joined as ever by Dr. Michael Brooks.
Hello.
Been practicing that, haven't you?
Yeah, well, you know, I've had a bit of a while to sort that out, but I think I've got it now.
Yeah, you really have. One more time.
Hello.
So good, isn't it?
I know. Welcome back.
Like honey in your ears.
Oh,
is
yeah.
that the phrase?
Yeah, I mean, that's what people have said.
This week, we are going to be turning our attention to none other than Jumanji.
Oh!
Which,
which is just a superb film.
So good. So, there are obviously various Jumanjis. There's the first Jumanji, which was Robin Williams.
Yeah.
It's good.
To be honest, not seen it.
I mean, it's worth watching, but I have to, and this is controversial, it isn't as good as the remakes.
See, that is going to be controversial because my daughter said to me that the new one with The Rock is worse than the Robin Williams one. And I
not
said,
for the first time, your daughter is talking shit, Michael.
It isn't for the first time. But no, I mean,
she's fetishizing the past. That's
she's
all she's
a hardcore
doing.
Robin Williams fan. That's the problem.
Robin Williams is great. And in fairness, if Robin Williams was in the new film, it would be better. But he isn't.
And it's still great.
I loved it. I absolutely, yeah. To the extent that I'm using my goddaughter and her sister as an excuse to go to an advanced screening of the new Jumanji film, Jumanji to the Next Level, which I think is probably out this week.
Yeah, it's joyful, isn't it? It's a joyful
really
film.
It's really good fun. Kevin Hart, controversial figure. He's very funny. The Rock. Oh, man, that guy's funny.
I love The Rock.
The Rock's amazing. Have I met The Rock? Yes, I have. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I wondered how long that was going to take. Yeah,
not long at all. No. Answer my own question. But if you haven't seen it, the premise is, so in the original Jumanji was a board game and the players get sucked into the game. In the current versions, it's a video game and they get sucked into the game. It's the same premise, just a little bit updated. Yeah. So they're in this kind of, they're in a video game and it's very convincing and they're occupying the bodies of, so, The Rock, Kevin Hart, Karen Gillan, the lady from Doctor Who, is very good, and then Jack Black.
So what's the big question we're going to be asking of Jumanji?
Yeah, so a lot of people said, you can't do an episode of Science Ish on Jumanji.
Really?
And they were absolutely wrong. The big question is, could you ever live inside a game? So we're basically looking at virtual reality.
Oh,
where are we
nice.
At with virtual reality?
Right, yeah.
And I'm extremely excited about this episode.
Yeah. Who's the absolute Don who's answering the question for us?
Well, we have got an absolute Don. Professor Robert Stone, Emeritus Professor of VR, AR, XR and Telepresence. Yeah, you heard. At the University of Birmingham's Extreme Robotics Laboratory. So he's been working with this stuff for over 30 years. Started at NASA.
Oh, yes.
Howzy! That's bigger than my rock housing.
Yeah, that's a big one, isn't it?
Like that was in the sort of mid-80s. He invented the first tactile feedback gloves.
That's
in
a big idea too, yeah.
And now his team explores the human factors of VR, and they do a lot of work in things like defence. But there's obviously a lot of these, you know, acronyms knocking around, VR, AR, XR. So the obvious place to start was asking him what they all mean and how they're being used today.
Virtual reality is first and foremost about real-time human interaction with computer-generated databases, primarily visual and audio, but also with things like haptics and smell and so on. Augmented reality is where we're using those same virtual models, those same virtual assets, if you like, to bring meaning to the real world. So, for example, we will see headsets or smartphones or tablets displaying 3D objects and associated media like video, like alphanumerics, like graphics, but bringing meaning to a real-world scene. Mixed reality is almost the inverse of augmented, in that what we're doing is we're using real-world objects to bring meaning to the virtual world, because virtual reality is still quite primitive in many respects. So we tend to use the best of the real. For example, in our medical trainer, we have a very realistic human mannequin that makes the virtual seem more credible. So as we interact with the real objects through our specially modified headsets, you're actually feeling something real, you're seeing your real hands, but when you look up, you're inside a virtual helicopter. So that's the important difference between augmented and mixed. Apart from games, which a lot of people associate even today after 3-4 decades with virtual reality, there are many, many important developments for VR and its associated technology in society. Healthcare being top of my list, it's been top of my list for many, many years. Be that sort of personal healthcare, using virtual reality application for example, diabetes, or to distract people when they're being subjected to painful interventions like injections or bandage changes. And also in surgery, although I tend to be a little bit critical of surgery because this is an area where I think there's been too much interest in virtual reality technology at the present, and where we could potentially see some safety issues creeping on by people adopting these technologies far too early. But healthcare is a big one. Education is another. We can use virtual reality to play to the strengths and the interests of young school children and foster their abilities as we go forward for making them the creative media experts of the future. The list goes on. Obviously, there are applications in defence. We've been talking about a new project we're involved in using virtual reality to help supervise future autonomous vessels going across the Atlantic. I mean, the scope is absolutely endless.
So So I mean, I've known about VR. I can't even remember the first time I heard about it. It's been around a long, long time, hasn't it? Has it got this? It must have a huge history.
Yeah, I mean, do you want the long version or the short version?
Oh, God. Long-ish.
Long-ish, my trademark.
Maybe I should have said short-ish.
So in 1838, a guy called Charles Wheatstone, or Whetstone, he showed that the brain processes two different images from your eyes, slightly different, so there are different angles,
yeah,
and from a slightly different perspective, and it processes them into a composite image. And therefore, you can simulate depth by putting two pictures side by side. And then that gave rise to the development of these things called stereoscopes. And so the most famous one is like the ViewMaster stereoscope,
yeah,
you can still get as kids, like little goggles. Then the first simulator, so like flight simulator, when do you think that was?
60s.
1929.
No way.
Yes, called the Link Trainer. And it kind of mimicked the feel of the controls and turbulence and stuff.
Wow.
Very early flight simulator. And then in the mid-1950s, someone called Morton Heilig developed this sensorama, which is kind of cabinet simulating all of the senses. So you've got fans in there, you've got smell, you've got vibration, you've got a 3D display. And then he also, crucially, patented the Telesphere mask, which was the first head-mounted display, which are the things that we now associate with VR. So
yeah,
big,
okay,
chunky goggles. But by the early 60s, they had motion tracking. So if you move your head, you look around your virtual environment.
Okay,
it's obviously quite a key.
I mean, that is the key thing of VR, in a sense, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Well, this is our virtual reality glove. It's called the data glove.
Virtual reality, as a term, wasn't coined until 1987 by Jaron Lanier.
Yeah, I've met him.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, not as good as meeting The Rock, but still.
It's close.
So the idea is that by wearing computerized clothing right over your sense organs, you transport your sensory system into a reality that can be of any description.
It's worth saying that Sega and Nintendo in the 90s had a decent crack at virtual reality, but couldn't get it to work.
Just
so Sega, I don't think
the
ever...
processing power.
No, Sega, I don't think ever released theirs, did they? And Nintendo had the Virtual Boy.
Yeah.
It was just, basically, it was crap.
Yeah.
But now, you've got all kinds of competing virtual reality headsets out on the market. So you've got Oculus Rift.
Oculus, which is owned by Facebook, is really the leader in this field.
HoloLens.
HoloLens has see-through, holographic, high-definition lenses.
HTC... Vive, Samsung Gear.
You can get what's called a Gear VR. You plug your phone in and then your phone becomes the display.
Sony's got a PlayStation VR. It's a crowded market.
So how do these things actually work?
You've got, effectively, your entire view through these, let's call them goggles, is just a computer-generated simulation. And when you move your head, what you're seeing follows. So that's the motion tracking. That's quite important. And either you'll have two separate displays to create this stereoscopic depth, or you just have two separate feeds into one display. Either ways. And you have them slightly angled, and that will give you your 3D image. They're constantly measuring your head's position in the X, Y, and Z axes. And so they're using, you know, like gyroscopes, accelerometers, magnetometers. So quite sophisticated, so they can track everything that your head is doing, and then the image moves at the same time. You also need this sort of 3D audio. So you need to have audio that appears to be coming from different directions. And then you basically just can plug in as many other inputs as you want or as are available. So you can have voice control, you can have kind of smart gloves, you can be on a treadmill.
All right, so, I mean, they're not perfect yet. So how far from, you know, the situation in Jumanji where it's like fully immersive, you really think you're in there?
There's a few barriers, I think, to this. So the first is an absolute classic for us, which is that we have quite a limited understanding still of how our consciousness and our senses relate to the sort of exact workings of brain and our nervous system. Like we have some idea of how some processes work and where they're located. So we're expect to see electrical activity in the brain when I'm doing certain things. But at the finest level of detail, we're quite a long way off. That means that we don't know how to replicate those things with
right, so it's
electrical
not just
signals.
About like presenting you with an image and some sound. It sort of goes a bit deeper than that.
It does, really, yeah. I mean, if you look at the way that like retinal or cochlear implants work, they're still using the sophisticated apparatus of the eye and ear,
yeah.
Like the bits that are still working. They're not producing signals from scratch. They're effectively a repair job. We can do that, but creating signals from scratch that exactly replicate the kind of signals we'd be getting from our actual sensory, our nervous system, we don't know how to do. And we're probably quite a long way off of that.
I mean, that would be effectively like, you know, recreating the Matrix.
Yes, exactly. So, which would be the ultimate version of this, because that's sort of what you're seeing in Jumanji, really.
Is an
incredibly detailed, almost like perfect simulation where you're embodied in someone else. There's lots of research being done into sort of the nerve impulses and their relation to limb movement and stuff. We are getting somewhere, but it's not that advanced. The biggest barrier, really, is just ethics.
Really? Is it a big barrier?
Well, it is, because we can obviously, and are, doing experiments on animals. There are, unsurprisingly, people have been hooking. Actually, no, I say unsurprisingly, but there's no ethics surprisingly. Like, it's not the first thing I'd do. But have hooked up a cockroach or cockroaches.
I think
to
when you
of,
know scientists, that's unsurprising.
Yeah. To a sort of virtual reality setup. So what you have is you have your cockroach, you sort of tether him, or her, onto a ball that you can then kind of run on, and the ball is freely rotating. So he feels like he's running around.
Yeah.
And then you put him into a kind of virtual reality. I guess it's sort of like the inside of a sphere.
Yeah.
And then you project the image of, for example, a forest. So the kind of thing that it would be used to seeing out in the wild. And then you just watch how it tries to move around this virtual forest. And it does what you'd expect. So it scuttles about, tries to avoid trees. Sometimes it will sort of walk through a tree. You'll be like, well, that's not great. But they think that's probably because there's no tactile feedback. So normally it'd be getting, as soon as it got, you know, the antenna would tell it to move away from that. But the good thing is that you can monitor the brain activity while it's moving around and while it's sensing its environment in a way that you wouldn't be able to do if it was out in the forest, because how are you tracking it?
So you
can monitor its activity, and then you can start making some, you know, judgments about the mapping between the behavior that you're observing and its brain activity.
Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
So you could tell whether it thinks it's real or whether it's just confused by what's going on.
I don't think you'd be able to tell that at all, which I think is part of the problem with this.
Right.
What you would be able to say is, okay, when it sees a tree, this part of its brain is lighting up, and then this part is saying, okay, go right, and that corresponds. And so you start to build up a picture of, well, just correlations between brain activity and movements and behavior.
Yeah.
That you wouldn't be able to do in a less controlled environment. This is obviously the thing about virtual reality, is it is the ultimate controlled environment.
Yeah.
You can control everything about it. So if you've got a mouse in a maze, you can try and control, but you can't control everything. Whereas in virtual reality, you absolutely can control every aspect.
I mean, you can change the maze effectively.
You can do whatever you like. So it's very appealing for research. I mean, as you can imagine, with this technology, there is a lot to think about. And partly, it's not just how good is this virtual reality world, how convincing is it. You have to think about the good and bad effects of virtual reality on our bodies. And we spoke to Professor Robert about that.
It's a fact that about 3-5% of the population will experience some degree of malaise or nausea, right through to full-blown sort of vomiting, within about 3 to 5 minutes, maybe even less, of putting virtual reality equipment or virtual reality headsets on. And that's just a fact. It's very unlikely that any virtual reality headset, no matter what kind of optical or display technology they're using, that 3-5% of the population will still be with us. These are the people who feel nauseous when they're a passenger in a car, for example. It's a fact of life. In terms of people who are spending long times in virtual reality, the basic answer is we don't know what the long-term effects actually are. But certainly, when people return to the reality of the real world, having been in virtual reality, they do take some time to adapt to get back. And given that we are putting barriers to interacting with computer databases on the humans, they will inevitably have some effect on the way in which A, we sense and we organize information about the world, and B, how we then interact with it using our hands, using our legs, whatever. However, the early evidence for putting people into virtual natural scenes, which we've been developing and evaluating in our own local hospital and in the Southwest, is very encouraging indeed. There is an innate connection between the human and nature, and it seems that we can get very similar psychological and physiological responses, for example, the release of endorphins and other brain chemicals, when exposing individuals to virtual reality scenes of the coast, virtual reality scenes of forests, for example, and all the sounds and sights that go with them. So this ability for them to relax and for the relaxation effects to enhance their recovery periods, reduce their requirements for painkillers, and to make their experience in hospital much more pleasant. The evidence is there.
So as Professor Robert is saying there are some amazing medical applications being developed, and quite surprising see the positive effects that you're creating in a virtual environment then lasting back in the real world.
Yeah, and having actual chemical effects on your body, like the feel-good factor of being at the coast or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. In fact, I'd quite like that. Just like some point in the day, I'll just stick on the headset and just feel like I'm on holiday for 15 minutes.
You really would, and it would give you a little boost. Yeah. And you'd continue with that feeling.
Yeah.
Just be a bit of a downer quickly, if I can, by saying that there are obviously...
It's not like you.
There are obviously issues.
Right.
And one of the main ones is, cyber sickness. And no one quite knows what's causing it, but this idea of sensory conflict is kind of the leading theory. So sensory conflict is the idea that the information you're getting from your eyes and maybe your ears doesn't match up with your body's other senses. That doesn't explain why different people react in different ways, though. Because if that was it, then you'd expect that everyone would experience it.
But not everyone experiences motion sickness in a car, do they? Or on a roller coaster?
That's right. So another theory actually is that there's a sort of, some people just have a kind of like postural instability, like wobbliness.
Yeah.
That people are more prone to getting car sick and stuff. And almost just less coordinated, so can adjust less quickly.
Well, we'll just leave them behind.
I think people aren't entirely convinced by that. It's really interesting, like why they think that you would feel sick or have nausea as a reaction to this. It might be an evolutionary thing where your body thinks, I must have taken in some sort of hallucinogenic toxin. I need to get it out.
Oh.
That must be why I'm confused.
Right.
And so, hence, less vom.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But, there's loads of great videos on YouTube of the kind of stuff that can happen to you if you're using virtual reality. Obviously, you lose all spatial awareness in the real world. So you're just like tripping over stuff, getting your arm caught in a fan above you, all that kind of thing. You just got no idea where you are in the room.
Yeah.
Like quite quickly as well, you're clueless.
Yeah.
There's obviously like dizziness and kind of disorientation. 1 in 4,000 people, I think, have seizures, even if there's no history of epilepsy or seizures.
Wow.
Then you've got nausea, obviously, eye soreness and focusing difficulties, but much like if you just stare at a computer screen or a TV for a long time, except slightly worse because it's closer, I think.
Yeah.
The most worrying thing that I've found is to do with rats. So rats in virtual environments, when they're navigating their way around, 60% of the neurons in their hippocampus shut down.
What?
And it is not clear why. So the hippocampus does all sorts of stuff. It's involved with learning and dreaming and memory and stuff. But it's also critical in mapping your location in space.
Yeah.
And 60% of it is just like done. Just turns
weird.
Off.
What
really? And people think it's because of the visual vestibular discrepancy. Maybe
it's just like overload.
Reboot
that.
Don't get it. Don't get it.
Yeah. Just turn it off.
Yeah, turn it off. It'll be okay. And I don't think anyone's seen whether that's happening in humans.
Oh, we need to know that, don't we?
Ideally, you would want to know. Or at least you need to know that it turns back on.
I don't think that's great.
No.
I don't think that's a good sign.
Well, no, of course it isn't. It's a horrible sign.
Yeah.
I ask you to do me one simple favor. I said, do my homework so I don't get kicked off the team, and you went and messed that up. Now I can't do the one thing that I'm actually good at, and it's all your fault. I should kick the shit out you right now.
I'd like to see you try.
What did you say? Oh, okay. Oh, I see what's going on here.
Guys.
Oh, you think because you what, 6'4", 6'5", 270 pounds of pure muscle, I'm supposed to be afraid of you? Is that what you think?
Maybe.
Let me tell you something. You're still the same annoying kid that I've been trying to shake since 7th grade. Ain't nothing changed. Don't let this new body get your butt whooped.
So I love that Professor Roberts stuff about hospitals. So obviously, we're completely susceptible to really what are not entirely fully convincing VR demonstrations, but are we getting anywhere with a kind of, you know, touch senses, other senses?
Yeah, we are, because obviously that's the thing that breaks the illusion most readily, is if you wave at an object that appears to be solid in the virtual world, but then your hand just goes straight through it, you're like, oh, okay, there's nothing there. So you need to somehow create the feeling of solidity.
Yeah.
And in fact, all of the senses, you know, it's not enough to just have audio and visual. So there's a thing called the Tesla suit, which is like full body haptics. So haptics is just touch.
Yeah.
And that uses transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation, TENS. So it's non-invasive, but it just stimulates your nerve cells, can recreate the feeling of touch, even the weight of objects in the virtual world. And so you end up with this, you get tactile feedback through these sensations, and they're quite rudimentary because the resolution isn't that high. I mean, you've got sort of like there's a haptics glove which has these tiny little blisters of air called tactors, I think, all over the hand, and they again can give the illusion of shape and movement just by inflating and deflating little, you know, indentations on the skin. And even you have a sort of like an exoskeleton, so it can resist. So let's say you're grabbing at a sphere, a floating sphere, then the exoskeleton will sort of pull back on your fingers so that you can't grip through the thing. So it feels like there is resistance.
Oh, that's amazing. I want to try that.
Yeah, which is extraordinary. So just pulling back your fingers a bit.
Yeah.
So it feels like, oh, okay, yes, I can't.
Yeah, so I've got that
through this.
Now.
I've got this thing in my hand. And so you get, you know, a reasonable illusion of solidity. And I think that they're, at the moment, they're getting there, is what I would say. And there's not really an equivalent for full body yet. You know, these gloves are pretty amazing. I mean, they're doing spicy stuff as well with temperature. So you have these tiny little pipes with hot and cold water so you can, you can feel temperature changes.
Whoa!
It's coming along leaps and bounds.
I like that.
Mm.
So it's looking pretty good. Are we almost there?
Well, sort of yes and no. We asked Professor Robert the ultimate question: could we live in a game like Jumanji?
It's very hard to say where this technology is going. It's certainly moving towards cableless virtual reality and giving people the freedom to interact with virtual worlds using the skills that they were born with. That's an absolute must. We are decades, if not a century at least, away from the Star Trek holodeck. There are people who are claiming that they are building the holodecks, but they're not, when you actually look into them in great detail. What I would like to see in the coming years and decades, if I'm still around, obviously, much more consideration of visual display units that are wearable but not intrusive. And we're getting there slowly. A lot of the so-called retinal resolution headsets, which they're not really, but they're publicized as that, are moving in the right direction, but they're still very bulky and they're still incredibly expensive. I'd like to see the sense of touch being given serious consideration. At the moment, they are gimmicks. Unfortunately, they're expensive and unreliable gimmicks, and we need to improve on that sense of touch. I'd like to see more in the area of smell. We've been dealing with smell now for the best part of 4 years in some of our projects. And again, that is even more immature than any of the other sensory modalities that we want to exploit in VR. So I would like to see a lot more development tailoring the equipment to what the human needs, making that interface between him or her and the virtual world much more transparent, much more intuitive.
Alex, what year do you think it is?
What do you mean? Oh, no. It's 1996.
You're Alex Reek, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. Wait a minute, you mean Freakups? Wait, what are you guys talking about? How do you know me?
Alex, I don't exactly know how to taste.
You've been in this game for 20 years.
That's probably not how I would have done it.
What? No. You guys are messing with me, right?
No, we're not. Alex Vreek, everybody in Brantford knows about you. You're the kid that disappeared 20 years ago.
20 years? 20 years, man.
When it comes to living in a game, yes, we could. I don't think I would, and I certainly wouldn't want to live permanently a game. And I certainly think that, again, to use the analogy of the Star Trek holodeck, then things like bodily functions and drinking and eating and all the kind of things that we take for granted in reality will one day be achievable, whether it's by using mixed reality, as I said earlier, blending the best of the real with the best of the virtual, or whether it's totally virtual by some technology yet to be invented, I don't know. It would be a very sad state of affairs if people decided to stay in that game, I think, because they would be missing out on all the benefits that society should be bringing to us, and causing even more societal problems as we move forward. But yeah, I think for a little bit of escapism, depending on the game, then I would spend some time in it. I mean, I would love to spend time, for example, if they ever produced a really, really convincing virtual reality version of Half-Life 2 or Half-Life 3, because I think that's one of the best games that has ever been produced. But I wouldn't want to be in there full time. I just a little bit of escapism, yes. Full time, no.
I think I'm with Professor Robert there.
Really, you don't fancy the IV drip and the colostomy bag?
I don't think I do.
Catheterized.
But you do mixed reality, wouldn't you? So you'd be eating stuff in the real world, but in the virtual world, it would be more delicious.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably.
It'd be some. Yeah, I think so.
I guess that's what I'd do.
Yeah. So you could have like taste implants or something. Where you get injected with sugars into your mouth, so you get the taste of something that you're eating in the virtual world.
Yeah.
I mean, you can imagine a setup where you just never had to leave.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you're into kind of Matrix territory again, aren't you? You
massively are. You massively are. Yeah. We are now going to have a long discussion about the idea of virtual embodiment. So the thing about Jumanji is that part of it is that you're convincing someone that they're somewhere else. So they're in the Jumanji landscape, having this fantastical adventure. But the really significant thing is the virtual embodiment, which is you're convincing someone that they are someone else.
Yeah.
So not just somewhere, but someone else. And virtual embodiment is possible. 10 years ago, people did this, and with a really basic setup. And the setup is you stand opposite a mannequin.
Yeah.
You have a sort of a headset on you, and then a feed from two cameras on the mannequin's eyes, effectively. So you are seeing, if you like, what the mannequin sees.
Okay.
And when you move your head, the mannequin's head also moves. And so when you look down, you see the mannequin's body. If you then have someone poke the stomach, so they poke your stomach and the stomach of the mannequin, you apparently feel like you are in the mannequin's body.
Yeah.
You meet, and so you're totally outside of your own body and in the mannequin's body. And the mannequin, it doesn't look like a real person.
You think
doesn't
I am
look
a mannequin.
Like your yeah. It's just like oh yeah. And your brain apparently is fine with that. Your mind, I should say, your mind's just like
fills in the gap.
Yeah, there we go. We're in. So we're in here now. Which I just really. This blew my mind.
I'm not surprised by this in a way, because I've come across stuff where we have this really fragile relationship with where we are and how we map the sort of space around us and stuff. If I think about myself, like, it's in my head.
Yeah.
And these are the things that I use, you know, my hands and my feet. These are the things I use to kind of manipulate.
But I could convince you you're in other ones. And then as soon as you say that, you're like, well, hang on. Then in what sense am I contained within this body?
Well, you know, effectively, I'm not at all.
If I can pop you into another one.
Well, this is why you can do mind uploading in theory, isn't it? Because we sort of think of ourselves as not even in a body necessarily. Body's just useful.
Surprising how fragile our embodiment is. The Jumanji stuff you can do. And also, back to our point about how this stuff will affect you, they've done some really interesting things with role-playing with abusers, so domestic abusers. So you put the man in the position of a generic woman, and then an abuser comes in and like shouts at them and all this kind of stuff. And afterwards, they understand much more, and they think even recidivism is reduced by that. So just like the experience of being like the classic thing of walk a mile in someone else's shoes, you can do that with virtual reality. It's insane. You can even do a thing where you're in the virtual room and turn the avatar off, and so you're sitting in there and you're just sat in there, but there's no body at all.
Ooh.
Like body's just gone. You're just right. Sort of a floating presence.
It sounds like torture to me. It's like that's messing with your mind quite a lot.
Really, really messing with it. But also,
so you have to use this for good.
You do have to use this for good, because you could sort of convince someone that they no longer, you could put them into this scenario and say, oh, you've no longer got a body. You're just like a floating. You're a ghost. Unlucky. But it's really reading about this and watching a lot of YouTube videos, I was like, I can't believe how easily you can be taken out of your own body.
And so for you, the big takeaway is our fragile embodiment.
Incredibly fragile embodiment, and the fact that actually that to me says, yeah, absolutely, you could definitely do something like Jumanji. I could be in the Rock's body and believe that I was in the Rock's body.
Let's do it.
I mean, I'd rather that than Kevin Hart, probably. So that's my, I think that's my big takeaway. I think that we don't know the other sensory stuff. It's not quite good enough yet, but it's probably going to
really
take
necessary.
I don't think it is. I think you would believe that you're in these virtual worlds anyway, and you can definitely put yourself into someone else's body and live in another body and be happy that it's you.
Yeah. Wow.
What the fuck? This episode of Science-ish was brought to you by Radio Wolfgang and feature Professor Robert Stone. It's presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. The producers were Eli Block and Ivor Slayer-Manley. The assistant producer was Cormac McAuliffe, and the executive producer was Harry Watson. Next week, it's the big one, Star Wars. Is the Force a real thing? You can follow us on Twitter at science_ish. We also have a book out, Hollywood Wants to Kill You. It's great. Well, there we go. It's good stuff.
Don't need
to round
this up, do we?
It's good stuff. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
Your